Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome to Ghosts in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today we have a historian, instructor, a writer, a person who specializes in death history, historic hauntings, investigations, a witch, a psychic, a gypsy, and so much more. Stephanie McGrath, the Fey Witch. She will be on right after these messages.
Hey guys, this is Vanessa. My podcast is Life Paranormal with Me. Listen as I serve you all things spirit, paranormal, and unexplained. Join me every other Saturday as my guest host and I recount our own experiences that will perplex and utterly terrify you. Life Paranormal with Me is available on all major platforms such as Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Join the Lifer fam by following me on Twitter at @VLifeParanormal. Follow, like, subscribe, and hit that notification button so you can always catch a ride on this spooky vibe.
Welcome, Stephanie, to the show, and I'm really excited having you on today. You have quite a bit of background. Is that right?
Yeah.
Are you a historian?
Yes, I am. I have a master's in American history.
Yeah, I see that you're a historian, American death culture, instructor, a writer. Mm-hmm. You specialize in 19th and 20th century American death history. You want to explain a little bit, you know, what that's all about?
Death history kind of encompasses a lot of different facets. Some of us focus on the funeral industry. Some of us focus on memorials and burials and things like that. When anthropologists look at the birth of a civilization, that's the point at which humans start burying their dead. So we had a very different relationship with death in the past than we have now. And so a lot of death historians look at the various things that have arose when we saw the actual funeral industry come to life. And things really changed in the 18th century, but they also changed America. The things that create mass death create a mass reaction, and usually it really profoundly changes the way the course of that civilization goes. And America is absolutely right there with the rest of the world.
I mean, with the Civil War, over what 600,000 deaths. I mean, outside the war itself, you know, with the disease and famine and everything that went down after that, you know. And I was thinking about when the Ouija board came about, you know, and before the Ouija board, you know, these games that came about to actually try to contact you with the dead. And I think that was brought about because of the mass deaths of the Civil War.
Exactly. I'm actually writing, in the process of writing a book. It was part of my master's thesis. Basically, death in America in the 18th century spurned this mass movement of the American spiritualists, and they ended up influencing cultures all over the world. Spiritualism can be found everywhere now, and it's not as prevalent as it was back then, but it was a way for people to heal from so much grief and so much mourning. What I focus on is generally how mourning and grief affect our culture and how it changes us as Americans. It affects our nationalism. It affects our Americanism. It's part of our folklore, you know. I mean, 18th century big houses, they all seem to house these wonderful ghost stories. And
right. Do you think that's because they didn't have their proper farewell, their proper goodbye?
Exactly. Exactly. Particularly when you talked about the Civil War. Most of the history books, I'll say, you know, the 600,000, but currently historians are averaging that at more around 880,000. And they think that that's probably a very conservative number because we weren't tracking what happened to these men off the battlefield. Most of these numbers are just what happened on the battlefield. If they put them in the back of a wagon and attempted to get them home, they may not make it. So that's not really counted. And that leaves people with that horrible sense of lacking closure. And I think that's what mediums in the 18th century were trying to do. They were developing these ways, like the Ouija board, to speak to people. And that actually became one of the central focuses of my work, is how actually spirit communication in, you know, conjunction with mourning changes us.
Like you said, you know, these buildings and historic sites. And I've been to Gettysburg, you know, and have been on a couple of the ghost tours and walks and have talked to different paranormal investigators while I was there, you know, just so much activity.
Yeah.
Always believed, you know, paranormal is the result of dealing with spirits of untimely or violent death.
Right. Exactly. And we changed our relationship with death so drastically in the 18th century because of that. It used to be people were dying at home, and then we cared for our dead and we buried them. And there was no funeral home. They did that at home. And it was a much better goodbye for the people that were left behind. And so I think that that's a central focus on part of what changes everybody and part of what drives them to try to attempt the spirits on the other side. And Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, also Dr. Winters, had done an excellent book. But they pointed out that it was helpful to the soldiers as well, the ones that had passed away. One soldier even wrote home, he felt the mediums needed to help all of these people that had died on the battlefield in World War I. So it was permeated in our culture a lot more than people gave it credit for.
Right. And, you know, I was looking through, you know, some of your works, and I really love the fact that you keep, you know, the women out there that were forgotten, how important a part they played in everything, not just the Civil War, but they're never given credit.
Exactly. Ann Browdy did an excellent book called Radical Spirits. And that book talks all about the feminist movement and the reforms that they were trying to do. So a lot of these spiritualists were very politically active. They wanted social reforms, they wanted marriage reforms, they wanted equality of the sexes, and, you know, they fought hard for it. They were the early suffragists.
So, you know, you figure, you know, not only were the women, while the men were out fighting in the war, now I should mention, too, a lot of women, too,
yeah,
fought in that war.
Yeah, they did.
Right, you know, and
in their home, taking care of the family. They're in the workplace and the factories, right, cooking dinner, taking care of the kids, you know. And like you say, you know, women that fought in the Civil War.
Right.
Actually went in as men.
Right. Right. One lady went in as a man and took command of her injured husband's unit, marched them across 3 states, and then won a battle. So she was pretty good. And then they found out she was a woman, and they made her step down, and she became very bored sitting in Chattanooga during the siege and decided that she would become a spy.
Because I didn't know that. I didn't know. I knew that there was a lot of blacks that entered the slaves that entered the war, you know, actually turned the war around because of slaves.
Right. Right.
You know, but I was really astounded by the amount of, and after doing more research, after reading your articles, you know, the amount of women that did fight in the war.
Right. Right. Pretty impressive, the things that women accomplished. And, you know, back in the day, male historians didn't really give that a lot of credit. And men didn't give women a lot of credit in their record keeping. This is all information that I kind of feel like, you know, people should know. These are the hidden histories, I think.
Right. And I think after doing this podcast for like 3 years now and being involved in paranormal for over 40 years or whatever, I'm kind of blessed to have so many people like yourself and all these other guests I've had on to actually educate me on some areas I was lacking, I think, because of my education. And they don't teach you that in the history books. You know, so much is left out. You think that's because it's a man's world?
Yeah, I really do. I feel like the 18th century was very much the first movements of the equality movements. And what we had was a lot of people just fighting for, you know, basic human rights. They need their stories told. You know, some of these women were just incredible. They were free. One woman went back into service, and she went into the Confederate president's household, and she was serving them in the house and then going back to the family that she lived with on the northern side and telling them, you know, everything that she had heard. She was very instrumental in getting inside information that was at Davis's table. And she was right there for all the conversations.
You do historic hauntings?
Yeah. I'm really, really interested in historic hauntings, but also, you know, gothic horror novels and things like that. I mean, it's really kind of part of our culture and our pop culture and things like that. So it's really neat to hit these places and experience what's going on. My daughter and I really like going to a lot of these places and really into the spirit communication aspect of it. So I think a lot of that is probably part of all the stuff I had done with Feywitch. So, you know, I had been doing that since I was about 25. And I guess bringing my gifts and my mediumship to my historical work just kind of evolved. So I'm like really lucky and blessed that I found this niche and this aspect. But it's really neat to be able to share that with my daughter and, you know, my granddaughter and all that.
Right. Bring them into the fold, you know.
Right, right.
They're little paranormal investigators, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting to your fae witch, is that what is a fae witch?
Originally, I had been trained to do, it was called fairy Wicca, and it was using a lot of different spirits and elements, entities, things like that, and bringing them all together. It was kind of a meld of intense shamanic work and just kind of growing as a psychic and a person. And so it really influenced the way that my path went.
Is fae like fairy, like little people?
Yeah, the fae folk.
Mm-hmm.
It's big in Celtic lore. And we have an awful lot of that here in in the Appalachian foothills and stuff, you know, you hear a lot of those stories about, you know, the fae and the little folk. And one of my best friends, if you walk back into the woods behind her house and sit back at the creek, you can see that she's left little gifts for the fairies all over the place. It's like finding little treasures.
Right. I've heard Navajo Indian. Something to do with the Fae Witch.
Yeah. The Navajo have a lot of legends.
I don't mean the Fae Witch, excuse me. I mean the Fae fairy people or little people.
Right. Like the fairy people. Well, one of the things that has really interested me is that they're finding more that a lot of Celts had, or not a lot, but the Celts had been here before. And they're suspecting that the Norse came in and then went down through the Mississippi River, you know, coming in through Canada and stuff. So they have a very strong fae and elf kind of lore too. So I think those two cultures, when they met each other, just naturally everybody blended with their belief systems. And it was really interesting because when I was a kid, my dad made Indian jewelry. So we would often go, you know, on these long buying trips all through the reservations. And I think the Navajo was my absolute favorite. And they really have a lot of different creatures that they talk about. And one of the interesting things is that they have picked up some trail cam footage. I think it was in Yosemite that kind of bears up their idea of the Fae. And I just think it's really interesting that the things that they managed to share, and I think they influenced. And I think that's why we see so many similarities.
Yeah, I see also you do shamanic spiritual ceremonies.
Primarily what I do are cleansings. And that was where kind of the ordained minister portion came in, because I felt like more of, I'm not really Wiccan per se. And so I felt like a more inclusive representation really seems to work well in the locations that you're in. So if you're, you know, able to comfort them in the way that they would like to be blessed, it's a little bit easier.
Is shamanic kind of like Reiki?
It's very similar in that it talks about learning to use nature and other elements and other entities as part of how you relate to, for me, being a witch, because the two really blended really well. And so that was where I really came to that shamanic hat. And there was a lot of Native American concepts that had been, you know, infused in that wonderful training. You know? Right. And I had gotten finished with the training and I was just so energized to, you know, change my life. I mean, that had taken several years to finish it. And so, yeah, I eventually ended up going on for my master's.
So what's it like living as a gypsy witch?
You know, I'm hoping I get better at putting roots down, you know? but I love it, everything about it. And
so I really didn't know how to label you as, I mean, no offense, I'm just, when I'm looking at your background, you know, a gypsy, a witch, a psychic, minister. I mean, I'm like, where do I begin here? You know?
You know, and it's more just gypsy spirit.
Okay.
And I think, you know, the one influenced the other. And when I first entered into school, I thought they would be completely separate. And so this has been a really nice way to blend them all. And unfortunately, I haven't figured out a good label either. So, you know, I keep thinking, you know, you should really order business cards. And I'm going,
Yeah, you would need like five of them, huh?
Right, right.
My sister, she's an ordained minister, but she's been going to this. And it's near us here in Ohio. It's called the White Barn Healing Tent. Mm-hmm. And they do Reiki, you know, it's a big tent that American Indians come. They erect this every year. They take down at the end of summer. And she holds her healings and
wonderful
in the tent, you know. And I had terrible problems with my knees, you know. And I thought, I don't know if this can help me or nothing, you know. But my wife and I went, you know, and man, did we have such a great day there, you know, because you know, with the tobacco and the sage and the meditation, and how you throw, you know, your sage and tobacco into the fire. And
that really gets you into that mindset. You smell it. One of my best friends is a Reiki healer. And it's just this fascinating use of energy that I'm always amazed at how successful it can be.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was amazed. And there was a process of going into the tent, you know. You had to go left to right, you know, around a circle. Mm-hmm. And make sure your shoes are off before you go into the tent, you know. And everything was done with respect and of honoring the American Indian culture and beliefs, and passing your burden off to the next one. And, you know, and I went around the circle. And I thought it was just, we had a great time. I mean, I do plan on going back. And she's also the lady that operates this healing tent. She also takes in animals that are abused or they're going to kill. You know, so she has a huge farm there that, you know, the Amish drop off their horses instead of killing them or shooting them. They go there to spend the rest of their life, you know.
Oh, wonderful. I'm going to have to come up and find this place.
It's up in Ravenna, Ohio.
Okay. I know where that is. I'm in Columbus, so.
Yeah, it's White Barn. I think it's called White Barn Healing. It's on the internet, and she does great work there.
And, wonderful.
And I just was curious, you know, because you were talking about shamanic spiritual beliefs and ceremonies. And I always had a problem separating, you know, traditional religion with Reiki or, you know, in the Indian culture. Mm-hmm. And I remember years ago, you know, meeting an old Lakota Indian, and it was really interesting on how everything they believe in, you know, has a God. You know, it's like, you know, the good spirit, you're taking the good spirits out, or the evil, you're taking the evil spirit out of the everything that's living, plants, animals, humans.
I love that conjunction, you know, I mean, that point at which it all comes together is really wonderful. It's really, you know, it's really fascinating because a lot of what I experienced was very much a personal inner journey. So, you know, each month you're doing different things, and each time you progress to a different level, you know, you have to take it one step at a time and learn how to, you know, see the different things that they're trying to show you. And it's really amazing.
Correct. You know, I think as we live in a judgmental society that, you know, you don't have an open mind. And I think that's why my podcast is so successful, because I have people on to talk about Bigfoot or UFOs or spirits. And you know, I'm not here calling them crazy. You know, I'm here as an outlet to talk to that. Who am I to say you weren't abducted?
I was raised in the Sierras, not far from that Patterson Gilmore Bigfoot photo. And yeah, so as a kid seeing that, I'm a believer.
Yeah, you're down in southern part of Ohio, right?
I'm down in Columbus, but I generally spend a lot of time down in the Hocking area, you know, Vinton, Wayne National Forest, that area.
Like the Hocking Hills or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hocking Hills, love it down there. And it's so rich with Indian lore and legend and ghost stories. And it's awesome.
That's why I thought your page was so fascinating, because, you know, you had everything on there that I deal with, you know, like Native American Indian, Fey Witch, and somatic, you know. I was like, wow, you know. And plus, you're psychic too, right?
Right.
So I was just thinking back on, you know, like you were saying, the mass deaths, you know, like the pandemic, you know, flu or the virus and so many deaths. I believe there's going to be a lot coming out of this one too, you know, all the deaths that's happening now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, and I think especially now, this pandemic can be so poignant because of the fact that, you know, these people are being separated away from their loved ones. If you get it, everybody, you're losing that human touch. You're losing someone at your bedside. The family is losing the ability to be there as their loved one leaves and crosses. And it really, those kinds of things, I think, that drive people to psychics and mediums, because they didn't get that closure. They didn't get that last conversation, you know.
Right.
I'm a firm believer that, you know, we've lost them, but they haven't lost us. I really believe that there's, you know, spirits that are trapped and not able to cross themselves for whatever reason, which it helps if you can be able to do these rituals or, you know, be able to say an appropriate prayer to let these people cross. It really helps. And that can, you know, heal a haunting.
Right. You believe you can move a spirit on?
I do, because I think some spirits really do want to be moved on. I think they just get lost, you know. However, I think that that's different from, you know, a loved one coming and trying to do a visitation with us or moving something or trying to get our attention just to let us know that they're okay. And so, you know, I do think that there's that correlation.
Right. I believe the same thing, you know, that you can move the spirit on. And then when you deal with the, I don't know if you have dealt with the demonic side of it.
I have once. It's really not fun. You know, and I really feel like that's very important, especially with the spirit communication that I'm so fascinated with. You know, there, that comes with this protection side. And I think the shamanism and the witchcraft really come together and help me focus, help me protect myself going into these things and to keep from bringing something home by accident, which has happened once. And I think those things have to just be forcibly moved on. You know, it just pays to know what you're doing. And I think that's, you know, just part of what I wanted to be able to do. And it's really amazing that it's evolved to this point.
Right. When, even when I think back on the Indian burial grounds, you know, and how many buildings and museums and parking garages, et cetera, were built over top of these grounds, you know, and that's why you have so much activity.
Oh, yeah.
You're desecrating the spirits of the dead.
I was watching a Ghost Adventures one day, and they had a psychic come in, and she said, oh, yeah, but this is Indian burial ground. You don't want to mess with their stuff. And I think that's an issue, too, because, you know, Americans came to America and, or came to this country and totally discounted all the thousands of years that civilizations and towns and villages and even some cities for these, you know, natives have been created. And we don't think about what's gone on before and the trauma in a house that later becomes a residual haunting. You know, who's to say when that trauma happened? You know, it could have happened when there was a tent on that grounds, or it could have happened when there was something else. You know, we just don't know until you get in there.
Do you believe in the afterlife?
Yes. Yeah, I believe in an afterlife, but I also believe in reincarnation. I feel that to a certain degree, you know, we're choosing what goes on. And I believe also to a certain degree, we have small units of souls that are almost like our families. You know, these are the ones that we kind of congregate to. And so you hear people say, oh, I feel like, you know, I've known this person in another life. Well, you know, in my mind, that's quite possible. You know, scientists are studying what happens with the afterlife. And Sam Parnia is a doctor and a professor at like Stony Brook and NYU. And also, he's from England. He does something over in London too. But he studies how long our consciousness really lasts after the point of death. And he's a cardiologist. So a lot of times these people that he's interviewing have come back. And in some cases, after a really excessive period of time, and yet they can tell them what was in the room. They can talk about the conversations that were had. You know, they can see things on the other side of the hospital. I think there's more to us. We're energy.
Yeah, with you being a witch, you think that if you were living back in the Salem witch trial days, you may be one of those unfortunate victims that were
right
targeted, you know.
And I kind of think that, you know, has been a recurring theme in my life. My mom says that when I started talking, I started telling people I was a witch. And I have very vivid dreams about that sort of thing. So I really believe that this is part of my soul calling. And this is just me trying to fulfill that in this life. And hopefully we get to stop doing this over and over. It would be nice, but, you know, quantum mechanics and quantum physics and all that stuff, they're starting to even look at reincarnation. And I think it was Stanford that was saying that, you know, they really feel that there is something else. And the article I read said that it was akin to Buddhism in a lot of ways. So it's interesting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of it, I think, that we're starting to be able to prove. Like Bigfoot. Take Bigfoot, for instance. There's a professor in Idaho who's got DNA. Everybody wants a body, but we've got DNA.
I had a past guest on a couple of years ago. I asked him, why don't we find any bones of Bigfoot? And he said, well, why would we? What bones in the woods are left? I mean,
right.
Eat the bones, eat the meat. And he brought up a really good question to me. Was like, you know, did I think UFOs and Bigfoot were related? You know, a lot of your mass sightings of UFOs over lakes and ponds and bodies of water that you go in that area, you'll see sightings of Bigfoot,
mm-hmm.
hybrid people.
Yeah, that I think is a really good question because, you know, a lot of these people are saying that they're seeing more things going into the water, you know, the submersible style UFOs. And if they're going in and out of the water in remote areas, then they're going to see something. A bunch of sightings have said that there were, you know, adolescents or, you know, a male and a female and a child. So if they're family oriented and they're leaving rock structures and wood structures in certain ways, why wouldn't they bury their dead? That's what we do. That's what a civilization does.
Right. I think they're so much more advanced than we are.
Right.
Throughout the years, it's proven that they are, you know, and I think the government covers so much stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
The Israeli space minister, former space minister, recently retired. And after he retired, he said to the press, and it was fairly recently, that UFOs existed and that some of the major governments had agreements with them. And that basically he was 90 years old and retired. And so who cares if it's classified or not, and wanted the public to know. So who's to say not? And we've all of a sudden got this, you know, space force. That's something to think about, you know, and what a great thing to have, something that everybody thinks poorly of if you mention. You want to tank your career? Go ahead and say you're looking for Bigfoot. Oh, yeah, I'm a witch in hauntings. And, you know, it just, but there is a correlation. And what a great thing to hide behind.
Like I told a couple of my past guests, you know, when I was at a seminar and we were talking about spirits and ghosts, and most of the people there didn't believe. So weird that after the seminar, the people that stayed to talk to you were the ones that didn't believe. So I think they were curious, and they were told all these years not to believe, or taught not to believe.
Exactly. People are taught to desensitize to it and that it's not real.
Or if you're told you're a witch, or if you're told you're a medium, you're weird, or if you've seen a UFO, or you're abducted by a UFO, or you believe in spirits and ghosts, you're weird, you know.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I tried to throw that master's in behind it, you know, give it a little bit.
You talk about it because you know about it, you know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anything you want to say in closing where people can contact you and find out more about you?
They can find out more about me at theywitch.com and also deathhistories.com. Most of my writing is over there. All of my future works are over there. We're in the process of getting a gallery together. Well, we've got a gallery of photos focusing on spectrality and ghost photos, spirit photographs. And we're also going to get another bit up for EVPs and things like that. So if people are really interested in the spirit communication aspect of history, they should check it out.
Awesome. And I'll put all your links in the bottom of this podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
I want to thank Stephanie McGrath for being on the show. She has many, many talents. Please check out Stephanie's links at feywitch.com and deathhistories.com. Both links will be in the bottom of the show notes, and so please check those out. And join me in 2 weeks when I have V. She has a podcast called Life Paranormal with V, talking about the Fae Witch, while she also deals with the Fae, the little people. So you don't want to miss that one. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley. I'm your host, Al Cooley.